Hi there, welcome to Buzzwords and Bullshit. Andrew and I will be going through many of the main topics of regenerative agriculture, the idea being to sift out all the bullshit and the buzzwords and work out what's actually going to work.
Hello. Thank you for listening. Appreciate your time. I know there's an awful lot of podcasts and content, YouTube videos for you to be listening to. Hopefully we're providing you a slight point of difference and something that you will consider worthwhile. No doubt you would have heard of most of the things that we'd like to discuss, and you will have your own opinions, as we do. Hopefully we can provide a little bit of context, sort of wade through it, look at what's being said, what's claimed, what the research and trial data potentially shows us, to provide you with a little bit more of information and hopefully provide you with some content, if you will, some information to make those decisions on farm and make them a little bit more confidently.
Cool. Right, rambling over for the intro. Let's get down to it. Regenerative agriculture. There's an awful lot of it about at the moment. What is it? So the biggest buzzword of the lot is regenerative agriculture. So what are your thoughts, Andrew?
Regenerative agriculture, I personally don't necessarily like the term at all, but I understand why people are using it, why it's become popular. I think in society in general, we like to have terms for words, for phrases, for everything that we do. And regenerative agriculture isn't bad. But it's also a little bit fluffy and a little bit woolly. And like you say, what is it? I think when you look back at the history of the term, you know, it's been around a while. Regenerative, everybody knows what regenerate means. And we've adapted it for agriculture. And I suppose the basics of it and what people think about when you talk about regenerative agriculture are agricultural practices and methods of farming that regenerate the soil. First and foremost, the soil is the basis of the foundation of every farming enterprise. So it's the regeneration of that soil, whether that's soil organic matter, soil carbon, soil health, soil biology, soil fertility. You are regenerating your soil, which really is because we've not done things particularly well previously.
Well, this is my beef with it. Because if you call it regenerative agriculture, that implies all other agriculture is degenerative. So does that mean that for the thousands of years it's all been going wrong? Is there a point where it became degenerative? Why all of a sudden do we need, we had sustainable agriculture? That was a big thing through the late 80s, 90s. Everyone was rushing to be sustainable. Sustainable this, sustainable that. Now regenerative. How far can you push this? I mean, It just seems almost unnecessary. Agronomy is agronomy. Agriculture is agriculture. Have we really fucked up that much that we need to regenerate?
In some instances, I suppose the answer is yes. When you look at the sort of resilient soils and the ability for farmers to continue farming for a number of generations, and I suppose we've possibly been scared by the rhetoric that have been spouted out of politicians' mouths claiming there's only 60 harvests left. And then obviously we've had a huge shift and focus on carbon in the atmosphere and reducing CO2 emissions. And, you know, large industry has pointed the finger at agriculture as being the main cause of these emissions, which we know is bullshit. So the regenerative movement, if you will, has come from a number of different influences, or has been started by a number of different influences. But the key basics, going right back to the fundamentals, is farmers have, over a period of time, due to a number of different reasons, reduced the health of the soil. And that health would include biodiversity, it would include fertility, it would include the quantity, even the actual quantity of the soil. And we know that when we walk around the countryside, we both enjoy the countryside and we both live in the countryside. How often do we see soil running out the gateways?
Yeah.
How often do we see rivers and watercourses a little bit brown? So we know that we are losing our soils, and we are degenerating, is a bit of a harsh word, but we are reducing our soils, our topsoils, and our soil's overall health because of the farming practices that we have adopted. Not all of them, not of all of them in isolation, but combined together, we have reduced our soils, we have degraded our soils largely. And I would, if I had to point the finger, I would say probably Second World War, post-Second World War, when we had lots and lots of readily available, very, very cheap ammonium nitrate. And then the farming practices shifted towards a more intensive, more synthetic, more chemically driven method of farming, which has ultimately led to the degrading of some soils.
But then we're constantly being told about food security. We're told the earth is getting hotter, it's full of people, all these people need feeding. So what other option is there? Surely you just push the soil to get as much food out as possible to feed all these billions of people.
And this is probably we've got to the crux of it 10 minutes into the first podcast.
Five minutes 10, actually. Yeah. Never mind.
Into the first podcast. In that the reality is there's too many people and the earth's resources are stretched. There are ways in which we can farm more environmentally friendly or sustainably or regeneratively that can reduce the speed of that degradation. But ultimately, as a society, we waste far too much food. And the number of us are increasing, so therefore the amount of food we need to produce is increasing. You look at nature, which is what agroecology is all about, looking at nature and working with nature. When there are too many rabbits, disease kicks in, and all the rabbits start dying off because of myxomatosis.
COVID!
Exactly that. So we've got to a point now where the pressure of the human population has meant that these diseases, viruses, all these things that could potentially wipe us out. Look at history, the Black Plague. Yeah. Where there is a significant number of people, there is going to be an increase in disease pressure. So nature will naturally take care of and create that balance within society. We're trying to fight that, and continuing to feed more and more people into the future is going to be increasingly difficult. So something's going to give, whether people go hungry or we continue to reduce the resources that Mother Earth has provided for us.
Bloody hell, we got a bit deep, a bit quick on there. So we're all doomed. We all need to trim down and stop having sex. Is that what you're saying? Basically to save the planet.
I would start with, let's not waste food.
Yeah, no, I agree. Absolutely.
That's the big one.
It is disgusting.
You know the figures better than I do, but I think it's 20% of all food produced in the UK is wasted.
Yeah, something like 7% of the UK potato acreage just is thrown away. Yep. So all that effort goes into growing all these potatoes, a really good nourishing crop, and it just ends up as waste chips or crisps that are half eaten, things like that. It really is disgusting. We really need to sort our ideas out.
And that's not an agricultural problem as such. That's a societal one. That's something that we as a society need to get used to, eating wonky veg or veg that doesn't quite look as it should, or has possibly just been a little bit damaged in transport or processing, and then not wasting it when we actually buy the stuff.
So what does regenerative agriculture, where does that fit into that? What's the point if we're all doomed, if it's a societal issue? Most people see farming as, bad for the planet. In fact, I've got a quote here from the esteemed George Monbiot, if that's how you pronounce it. He says, "Do you eat? Then you might wish to consider that farming is destroying the planet." Now, that is quite a popular view. Now, I'm guessing that most people listening to this podcast are involved in agriculture in some way, and they may take umbrage at that. But if you actually read his book, Regenesis, it's really hard to actually refute what he's saying. So where does regenerative agriculture come into it? Is it worth doing? Is it worth doing as a hobby? Is it worth doing to actually save the planet? Or are you just doing it because you want to make shitloads of money on carbon credits?
Well, the first thing that I would say is everybody listening to this podcast, directly or indirectly, is reliant on agriculture.
100%.
First and foremost.
Yeah.
So everybody listening should be interested because...
Even vegans
rely on farmers. Less so because they're relying on industry. But anyway,
well, yes,
another
yeah,
point.
Yeah.
George Monbiot, he makes a lot of valid points. I think it's difficult to listen to because agriculture at the moment, or agriculture in general, is in a huge bubble. So we're all farmers, we're all involved in agriculture. We all read the Farmers Weekly, the Farmers Guardian, arable publications, dairy publications, beef, whatever it is, we're reading agricultural material. And then the books that we read in the evening and at weekends, 9 times out of 10, are agricultural books.
You know, Gabe Brown.
Everybody's read Gabe Brown.
Absolutely.
Everybody's read Nicola Masters, Matt Powers, John Kempf. Listening to the same podcast that we're now doing ourselves, it's become a huge bubble. And within that bubble that is agriculture, we've got an even smaller bubble, which is regenerative agriculture. Now, regenerative agriculture, over a period of time, has become a real echo chamber. Anybody that's been to Groundswell will know exactly what I mean by that, is you've got lots of like-minded people talking to each other in a field, telling each other how great a job they're doing, whether it's reducing carbon or min-till or no-till or reducing N inputs, whatever it might be.
Cover crops.
That echo chamber has grown now to the point where anybody else from outside that little echo chamber has an opinion, we instantly disagree with it and try and fight it and don't actually take a step back and look at it and its potential merits. George Monbiot is a perfect example of that. He is somebody that ultimately is trying to sustain planet Earth into the future, which is a good thing, and we should all be interested in doing that. His message is being manipulated by certain media outlets, and it's being refuted by others, and there's an awful lot of controversy around it. But the key points that he's trying to make are we need to farm more environmentally friendly. We need to be more environmentally friendly in the way in which we farm. And there are lots of things, lots of different farmers can do to do that, to create a sustainable, and I don't like using that word when we're trying to talk about it and define it, but if you can farm sustainably, to me, that means that you are not damaging the environment either directly or indirectly. You are producing nutrient-dense food, and you are sustaining your own farming enterprise. That's what I think we need to be striving to do, and you can call that whatever you want, but that, for me, would be a pretty good business model or place to start for anybody that's looking at transitioning from what has typically been called intensive conventional agriculture into more sustainable, regenerative, environmentally friendly farming practices.
I think you had a key point there when you said about financially. If it's not financially viable, it's not sustainable. So it's coming down to on farm how you balance this. You might want to save the planet, but at the same time, you want to feed your family. It's a very difficult choice. And is it just regenerative or bust? Are there sort of like shades of grey? Are you allowed to plough if you're saying you're regenerative? I mean, how is this playing? Why has this become a buzzword? Why is regenerative agriculture? Because a lot of people have been doing this stuff for a long time. And if you read some of these books from the 30s and 40s, which I'm sure some of you have, they're talking about all the stuff that's come around now. So is it just there's been a blip and we're trying to get back to that? What do we do? What on farm? You're on a farm. You're hearing about all this regenerative stuff. You've been told you can't plough. You've got to drill loads of cover crops. Is that necessary? Are you a regenerative farmer if you don't follow the dogma?
A really good point. A really good point. And everyone's going to have a different opinion on this. I think where I stand is agriculture is first and foremost, it is a culture, and you know, it's a way of life. For everybody that grew up on a farm, they'll know exactly what I mean when you say, you know, farming is part of you, the countryside, the animals, the machinery. It's a culture, and we do it because we love it as much as because it's some way of making a little bit of money. Obviously, is the way in which society has been formed over years. You know, we've got the economics of everything and capitalism and all of that. We can talk about that all day as well. But the key point is farming businesses, farming enterprises, farming families have to make money. They have to provide, put food on the table, have to pay their heating, their energy bills, you know, the occasional holiday or trip to the market or to the local royal show, wherever it may be. You know, you have to earn money to be able to live. Doing that is tricky. Typically, more means more. We've always thought that producing more crops or more milk or more meat means more money, to the point now where we're all producing, you know, 10 plus tons per hectare, or cows that are producing 12,000 litres over 305 days, or we're pushing daily live weight gains of over 2 kilograms a day. We're all getting pretty good at farming. All the food that we're producing from the majority of farms is all very, very similar. And unfortunately, what we've realised is producing more doesn't always mean more money. And the value of the food we're producing, because we're good at producing food, has actually decreased. So what we're producing has less value. So what we've decided to do, clever marketing, if you will, is try and create a point of difference. And I'm going to use, and I didn't want to use an example of a specific organisation, but something like the Pasture for Life Association, which I get behind and support and I'm a fan of, that's the bottom line. But they're trying to differentiate themselves from others to create value for their customers, their members, if you will. Same with Free Range Eggs. We got to the point where we were selling, everything was battery hens, battery chickens. You could only buy normal eggs. All of a sudden, the point of difference became free-range eggs. There was even they tried to push free-range dairy. Cows were outside for a minimum of however many days it was to class themselves as a free-range milk producing dairy herd. So it's clever marketing, trying to add value to products that people are going to buy anyway. So it's that sort of balance between what you're trying to produce and trying to get as much money from it as possible. So we've created these terms, you know, pasture-fed, free-range, regenerative, organic. All these different terms ultimately are to demonstrate to whoever's buying your produce that you're doing things differently and better than the next person. And that's where it's sort of stemmed from, if you will.
Okay, so you mentioned selling products, but also a large part that I've noticed about regenerative agriculture is buying products. There's not much emphasis on methods and just practice, you know, just sort of like, do you need to spend shitloads on a jug full of microbes to make your soil magically regenerate? It seems to be product after product, and this is one of the key reasons I'd like to do this podcast, is to say, is it just bullshit? If you buy this bunch of microbes and you slap them on the soil, all of a sudden, are you going to be sort of like living in the Garden of Eden? It just doesn't stack up. But the way that the regenerative agriculture is going seems to be either you get a consultant in and they'll sort you out, or you buy a bucket of something and that will sort you out. It doesn't seem to be about thinking about what your land can do and what your limits are and what you can do to start to, well, just rein things in a bit, I guess.
It's a really good point. The big industry secret that nobody wants you to know, I suppose, is that genuine, organic, regenerative, sustainable farming doesn't require inputs. You know, nature-friendly farming doesn't require inputs. So you can farm regeneratively, you can farm sustainably, you can farm environmentally friendly, you can farm commercially, and by that I mean it's commercially viable to farm, without using any inputs. So you're absolutely right. Do we need to have these bugs in a jug, biostimulants, whatever it may be, to farm environmentally friendly? The answer is simply no, we do not. There's somebody that I quite like and respect who mentioned recently, when you look at nature, where in nature are there any crops that are nitrogen deficient?
Yeah, good point.
There aren't.
No.
There aren't. So why do we need to buy nitrogen? We need to buy nitrogen because somebody's told us buying nitrogen is a really good thing, and they've made an awful lot of money from it. At the moment, there's a lot of people that are telling us that using biostimulants are a really good thing, and they're making a lot of money from it. There's people that are saying you have to go no-till. Yeah. Ploughing's bad. They're also the ones that are selling you a no-till drill. Yeah,
absolutely.
You mentioned potatoes earlier on and regenerative potatoes. If you have, you know, a good crop rotation that's maybe, you know, over 7 years rather than over the typical 4 years, you look at 7 years, trying to do no-dig potatoes is difficult.
Yeah.
There isn't a regenerative potato, for example. But if you were to plant and grow potatoes as we do now conventionally, and then the following 7 years, you look at multi-species swards, cover crops, you know, a whole host of good crop rotations, then any potential damage that you did ploughing and working the ground to plant and then harvest those potatoes over the full crop rotation isn't going to be noticed. You're still going to be in a better place after 7 years. We're looking at things in the short term. We're looking at quick fixes, quick instant results, because that's what we've been used to with products that we've been sold in the past. You've got to forget looking at instant results. You've got to look at the long term. And yes, there might be an argument or a case for getting rid of the plough and looking at min-till. There might be a case for putting in cover crops or getting rid of monocultures or undersowing with clover or beans or whatever it may be. There are arguments for all of those things. But you've got to consider the big picture, and you've also got to consider the long-term approach. There might be something that can help benefit now, but you don't want to become reliant on it. Biostimulants are a great example. Our soils are currently reliant on ammonium nitrate. We've managed to wean them off ammonium nitrate, but we've got them hooked on a sugary drink that is a biostimulant instead. So yeah. Are we any better off? That's what I mean when I say you've got to look at the whole picture, and you've got to consider every single product that you're buying, using, not just in the short term, but also in the long term.
Well, I think you're right. I think what we need to do is look at biostimulants, perhaps in our next podcast. I'm sure everyone's eyes are glazing over listening to us, especially you, your droney old voice. But what we'll do is we'll say then the next podcast, we're going to talk about biostimulants. I think we'll leave it here. I think we've made our case for what we're going to do in our podcast pretty clear. You've had just over 22 minutes of us. I'm sure you've got other things to do. We'll let you get on now, and we'll see you in the next podcast.
Appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Cheers. Bye.